Here's the thing about teaching power exchange for a living. Eventually, you have to ask yourself whether you're actually practicing it. I've spent the last year on this podcast teaching negotiated authority, shared leadership, co-regulation, the relational ethics of letting someone else actually matter in your decisions. And I was doing all of that alone, in a room, into a microphone. So this season, we're not fixing anything, we're expanding it. And today, I want to tell you how that happened, why it matters, and who is now sitting across from me when we do this work. Welcome to Untamed Ember.
We're your hosts, Dr. Misty and Michelle.
And today's episode is about why this podcast is evolving, what that means for you, and what it actually took for both of us to get here. So season one of this podcast was exactly what I intended it to be, a solo, structured, clinically grounded teaching space where I could lay out complex ideas about kink, polyamory, nervous system science, and relational ethics in a way that was rigorous and accessible at the same time. That format served a real purpose, and it delivered on it. But here's what I started to notice after a full year of hosting alone. I was talking to an audience I care about topics I care about, and there was nobody in the room but me. No friction, no pushback, no moment where someone said something that made me rethink a point that I thought that I had settled. It was just me, a microphone, and my own thinking in an echo chamber I had built myself. That started to feel really isolating. And that feeling was actually a sign that I was ready for something more. That the work had grown to a point where it needed a different container. Evolution in relationships, in kink dynamics, in polyamorous structures. It doesn't only happen from a place of crisis. Sometimes it happens from a place of fullness, from a place of being so solid in what you've built that you can afford to open it up and let something much bigger come in. That's where I was. And that's what this is.
So Misty and I had actually worked together on a short podcast project a few years back. We already knew that we had a good working dynamic and we could disagree without it becoming a problem, that our perspectives were different enough to be interesting, but aligned enough on core values to be coherent. So when Misty told me that she started to think seriously about bringing on a co-host, it wasn't something that I had to think too long about.
It's kind of a given. We had already worked really well together and we were excited to work together again. So from where you're sitting, before we ever even talked about co-hosting, what did you think that this audience would be hungry for that a single voice format couldn't give them?
You know, so when I was listening to Untamed Ember, what really stood out to me was how real and authentic it felt, which, you know, I love, even though it was just one voice. But I thought having more of like a back and forth conversation, more messiness, more of the stuff that happens when real people are just trying to figure things out together, it would be so important and so helpful for the listeners, because kink and poly aren't just theories or checklists. They're lived, they're messy, they're awkward, they're reality. And for me, that dialogue really matters because that's how we learn. That's how I learn best, not just by listening to someone talk at us, but by really hearing people wrestle with questions, kind of push each other or clarify things in a new way if maybe it doesn't land at first, and sometimes even disagree. That is really how we get to the heart of things. And honestly, teaming up with Dr. Misty just made sense. We've worked together before. I know we can hold space for each other's perspectives, even when we don't see eye to eye.
Great. That's so exciting to hear. And I'm so excited that we're back to working together on another podcast.
Me too. I've missed this.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So I want to share something that I think is actually the most important idea in this whole episode, which is that changing the format of this podcast isn't just a production decision. It's a values enactment. And I want to explain what I mean by that a little bit more. In kink, one of the foundational principles we teach is that authority is negotiated. It's not assumed, it's not taken, it's given explicitly within a structure that both people have agreed to. So when I hold sole authority over a space that exists to teach precisely that principle, there's an incongruence there. Practicing what you preach isn't just about the content of what you say. It's about the structures you choose to operate in. So this is me choosing a structure that matches the content.
In polyamory, we talk all the time about how agreements aren't static. They're living things that evolve as the people in them evolve, as capacity shifts, as circumstances change. A good polyamorous structure isn't one that never changes. It's one that changes intentionally with communication when the people in it have outgrown the current form. This podcast is in a relationship with me, with Misty, and with all of you. And this relationship is evolving because we have the capacity for something more complex and more interesting than what you started with.
So then there's also this nervous system piece to it. Monologue and dialogue are not equivalent experiences for a listener's brain and body. So when you listen to one person speaking, you're receiving information. And your nervous system is in a relatively passive state, taking in the information. When you listen to two people in genuine conversation, something different happens. You start to track the relationship between them. You attune to the dynamic. You notice when they agree and when they don't. And that attunement is itself a co-regulatory experience. Your nervous system is not just processing content, it's participating in a social encounter, two voices, two nervous systems, genuinely present with each other in real time. That creates something in the listener's body that a lecture simply cannot. And in a podcast about intimacy and connection, that difference is not a small thing.
Yeah, that attunement piece is so important, that co-regulation, because that is such an important part of just being a human, but especially when two humans are together, just noticing each other's nervous system and regulating together.
Do you remember when you made that video of you co-regulating with your cat for our newsletter back a couple years ago?
Yes, I do. And I love that you can co-regulate with even your cat. But that's such an important part of our work as therapists. So much of what we do really is showing up and co-regulating with the person across from us. And that's such an important part of poly too, just showing up and seeing where our partner is.
Yeah. And kink dynamics too. A lot of people wouldn't consider, you know, that co-regulation piece as so important, but it is in the aftercare, in the attunement to your play partner. If you're in a DS relationship, being attuned, that's just so extremely important in all aspects of kink and poly.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's such an important part of just showing up as a human in all the relationships that we're in, being able to see where someone else is and help them co-regulate if they're out of their window of tolerance.
Yeah, and what a great way to show compassion-based care for a person that you love and you care about, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about what this transition actually looked like internally, because I think that there's something useful for anyone who's ever had to negotiate a shift in a creative or a professional relationship, or even this attunement to a partner in a romantic relationship, like what we were just talking about. Anybody that they care about. The internal negotiation that I had to do was naming out loud that I wanted a collaborator. And it sounds simple, but there's actually a real vulnerability to that. Because when you've built something alone, when your name is on it and your voice is the whole thing, admitting that you want something different is a kind of admission of incompleteness, of having a need. And for a lot of high-functioning people who are used to being the one who holds things together, that's harder than it sounds.
Oh, yeah. That's really hard to kind of look at that and say, I want something different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I had to sit with what it would actually mean to let someone else's voice shape the tone of this work and not just add to it, but genuinely shape it, which is what I want you to do, because that's what real co-hosting is. Michelle is not a guest. She's not a co-pilot who follows my lead. She's a co-host, which means there are going to be episodes where she gets to take us somewhere I wouldn't have gone on my own. There are going to be moments where she pushes back on something that I think that I've settled for myself. And I had to be honest with myself about whether I was ready for that just in principle or in my body. Because being ready in principle and being ready in your nervous system are genuinely two different things. The fact that Michelle and I had worked together before made the trust question easier. We already knew that our working styles were compatible, but before we ever sat down in front of a microphone, we had explicit conversations about scope, about where her voice leads and where mine does, about what happens when we disagree on air and whether we resolve it or whether we let it sit, how we signal to each other that something needs to be addressed off mic instead of in the episode. We talked about what the boundaries of her role are and what the boundaries of my role are.
And if you can't tell, what we're doing here is that we're modeling exactly what Misty's been teaching. In kink, you negotiate the scene before you play. In polyamory, you have the relationship agreements conversation before you're in the middle of something that requires you to rely on them. You don't build the safety structure after you need it. You build it first. And then when everyone is regulated and thinking clearly, so it's there when things get complicated. Bringing me in was no different. We had to do the work of clarifying the structure before I showed up, and that's just good relational practice.
What did that look like from your side? What did you need to feel safe stepping into this space?
Yeah, when we started talking about me co-hosting, there was a lot, you know, that was coming up. I knew it was your project and I didn't want to, you know, step on your toes or disrupt that in any way. But I also really needed to know that I'd have room to be myself, my authentic, actual voice, not just echoing what you were saying. So I really wanted clarity about where I could challenge, where I could support, what I could bring in, and how we'd handle things if we did disagree on air. Because, you know, disagreement is inevitable, and it's actually a good thing. And so we both had some honest conversations about scope, what topics I'd lead, how we'd share airtime, and what it would look like if one of us needed to pull back or step up. And that made me feel safe stepping in. There are things that I wasn't sure about, of course, like would I feel out of my depth? Of course. Would my perspective be maybe too real or too authentic, maybe not clinical enough? But Misty was very clear that she wanted that difference, that knowing that we could talk about it openly and that our negotiation was part of the process really helped me settle in.
That's great. And the real voice, that's exactly what I'm looking for anyway for a co-host, because that's what I like to bring, is just my real self. You know, if you've listened to the first episodes of this podcast where I, you know, berate patriarchy, those are great.
my favorite the topic.
Yep. So we'll probably get into that together with two voices too, and just relive those conversations a little bit.
Yeah, I can't wait.
All right, so we want to do something here that we think is more useful than pretending we always land in the same place. Michelle and I have an ongoing real debate about how to think about jealousy. I'm going to start, and then I want Michelle to push back in the way she actually does.
Okay.
Let me start with the frame that I work from clinically, which is that jealousy is information. What I mean by that is that jealousy is a signal your nervous system is generating in response to something that it detected in its relational environment. And like all nervous system signals, it's worth decoding rather than suppressing or immediately acting on it. The signal has content. It's trying to tell you something. And if you can slow down enough to get curious about what it's saying, you almost always find something underneath the jealousy that is actually much more workable than the jealousy itself. What I see most often in my clinical work is that people don't do that. What they do is instead panic. The jealousy lands in their body, their nervous system reads it as a threat, and they go immediately into management mode. And management mode in relationships usually looks like one thing, trying to control their partner's behavior in order to reduce their own discomfort. They become micromanaging. They want to know exactly who their partner is seeing and when and for how long and what happened. Not because they actually need all that information, but because having it feels like it gives them back the control that the jealousy made them feel like they were losing. And from a nervous system perspective, that makes complete sense. The sympathetic activation that comes with jealousy is telling the body to do something to restore safety. The problem is that trying to control your partner is not actually a path to safety. It's a path to resentment. So what I want people to do instead is treat the jealousy as a starting point for internal inquiry rather than a starting gun for external action. Because underneath almost every jealousy response, there's something more specific and more workable. Maybe there's a fear of being replaced. Maybe there's an unmet need for quality time or reassurance. Maybe there's a value around honesty or presence that feels like it's been compromised. Any of those things can be talked about, and any of those things can be addressed in the relationship. But you can't get to them if you skip straight to managing your partner's behavior, because you never had a look at what was actually happening inside of you. I've worked with clients who've made this shift, and the change to how their relationship moved was significant. The conversation they were able to have changed completely. Instead of coming to their partner in accusation mode, defensive and contracted, they came curious. They could say, "Something came up for me and I want to understand it. Can you help me figure out what I'm actually feeling here?" And that kind of conversation opens things up. It creates movement and intimacy instead of lockdown and defense. The difference between those two approaches is almost entirely determined by what you do in the first 30 seconds after jealousy lands in your body. Do you go outward into control, or do you go inward into curiosity? And that choice is what I want people to be able to make consciously. So, Michelle, where does this land for you? Because I know that you don't fully agree with me on this.
So, okay, here's where I'll push back just a little bit. I get what Misty's saying about jealousy as information. And sometimes, I think a lot of times that is true. But sometimes jealousy is just your nervous system freaking out. It's old wiring, not necessarily some deep truth about your relationship that you need to really dive into. For me, the tricky part is figuring out, though, when jealousy is telling you something useful versus when it's just noise. This is where I always love to bring back that window of tolerance. You know, if I'm tired, stressed, triggered, jealousy can feel huge. If I have a tiny window of tolerance, you know, any tinge of jealousy, it's just gonna take over. But it's not always about what's happening right now. Sometimes it is just my body asking for comfort, regulation. How can I expand that window of tolerance so this jealousy doesn't feel as big, instead of just looking for answers? So I think before we can decode jealousy, we really have to check in with ourselves. Where am I at in that window of tolerance today? Am I regulated enough to trust what my feelings are telling me? Or do I need to take a breath, get grounded, maybe take a couple days, and then see what's left? Otherwise, I think we really risk chasing every feeling like it's a clue, when sometimes it's just a flare from old stuff.
That is so great. That's such a good perspective to have, especially about the window of tolerance. It's always great to bring that back in.
Thank you. You know, that is one of my favorite things to always come back to, because it's so important.
Yeah, and so relevant, especially within, you know, poly-kink dynamics. It's very relevant in relationships in general, just knowing yourself and knowing how you show up in your relationship.
Yeah, I could do a whole episode just on window of tolerance.
Yeah, we probably will. Great. All right, so that's exactly right there how this works. We'll bring up a topic and maybe we'll agree, maybe we won't agree, but we'll both have our own perspectives and you get to hear those perspectives and be a part of the journey with us. So I want to share what isn't changing since we've shared what has changed. Because I know that when a show that you love announces it's evolving, the first thing your nervous system wants to know is whether it's still safe to be here. The content background of this podcast is not moving. We're still here to talk about kink education and negotiation, polyamory agreements, and the real logistics of making non-monogamy work, consent and aftercare and repair, nervous system science in the context of intimacy, and the ethics of relational power. All of it. That's not changing because it's not a seasonal theme. It's the foundation. That's what the show is. This is still trauma-informed and consent-forward. It's still grounded in real clinical ethics and real nervous system science. It's still going to challenge the mainstream framing of sex and relationships without replacing it. The rebellious, nerdy, science-backed voice of this show is not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. What I want you to understand about Michelle joining is that she's not a replacement for anything you've had here. She's an addition to it. I'll still bring my framework, the science, the therapeutic grounding. Michelle brings something complementary. Two clinicians who see some things the same way and some things differently. In real conversation, in real time. You're not losing the show you came for, you're getting a fuller version of it.
So here's what's new. Instead of a solo lecture, you're getting a conversation between the two of us. Each episode will have a theme, but we're going to break it down together. Science, real life stories, and how to actually use this stuff, which is my favorite thing to dive into. Having two perspectives means you're going to hear some friction, not just agreement all the time. And that's a good thing. It means you'll get to hear us wrestle with ideas, bring in our own experiences, and sometimes disagree. It's not just an echo chamber. What I'm bringing is more of the conversation, the authenticity, my experience as a clinician, but also my lived experience as a human, But I want to have those conversations, those back and forth. I want to talk about what happens when theory meets actual humans and how we figure things out when it's messy. That's what I'm excited to share with you.
So we want to hear from you. And there are two kinds of questions audiences ask. There are the polished ones that sound good in a comment section. And then there are the real ones, the ones that are a little harder to say out loud, the ones that come with some shame attached or some confusion or some genuine fear that the answer is going to be uncomfortable. Those are the ones that we want. That's actually what the show exists for. So what are you wrestling with in your relationships, in your dynamics, in your community? What debates are you in the middle of that you want to hear two people work through out loud? What are you carrying alone that you'd like company with? Bring it to us. That's exactly what the space is designed to hold.
What debates are happening in your relationships or communities that you wish someone would talk about out loud? Drop them in. You don't have to carry them alone. We can unpack them together. So before we close, I want to give you some space to sit with something. Think about where in your life are you actually holding on to authority because it feels stabilizing. Not because it's the right structure, not because it's what the people around you actually need, but maybe because holding that wheel alone feels safer than negotiating the route. Maybe it's in your relationship structure. Maybe it's how you run your household or manage your creative work or show up in the community. Maybe it's in the way you've been the one who holds together for so long that you've stopped noticing there might be another way.
Notice if that question brings up something in your chest or in your gut. Notice if it makes you want to justify yourself or if it makes you feel a little relieved that someone finally named it. Both of those responses are information. Defensiveness is information. Relief is information. Whatever is coming up for you right now, don't judge it. Just notice it. Your body is telling you something about where you're holding on. And if there's activation there, if this is touching something tender or something you're not quite ready to look at yet, that's okay. Come back to it when you feel steadier. That's not avoidance. That's good nervous system hygiene. You don't have to transform everything in one listen. So Michelle, what's the last thing you want to leave them with before we close out?
If there's one thing I want to leave you with, it's this. Shared leadership doesn't have to be scary. Sometimes letting someone else in, letting them help steer, can actually bring you closer, not push you away. What would it feel like to try that? Just a little. Maybe you'll find more intimacy than you expected. This has been Untamed Ember. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Dr. Misty. Subscribe to the Untamed Ember newsletter at untamedember.kit.com for deep dives, bonus material, and the behind-the-scenes content that doesn't make it into the episode.
And catch the podcast for story, science, and skills. And if you want hands-on learning with real humans, join an upcoming live workshop or an on-demand class. Everything is in the show notes.
We'll see you next time.